Welcome, my friends, to the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. Today, we're going to talk about the future of conservatism, the future of the Republican Party, and the future of Christians engaged in culture somewhere beyond the enclaves of their own churches and homes. Here's a major theologian. I got this morning in my email. A major theologian, the Evangelical Reformed Caps. This guy teaches the pastors that will show up at your evangelical churches, your Baptist and Presbyterian Reformed churches over the next 10, 15, 20 years. This is what they are teaching. This is what they're thinking. This is what the theologians that run the seminaries are thinking. Here's the quote. We Christians live in a time of exile. We are indeed set for exile, though not an exile which pushes us to the geographical margins. It's an exile to cultural irrelevance. An exile to cultural irrelevance. That's us. That's Christians. That's conservatives. Goodbye, Christianity and its influence upon the Western culture. That's what some are saying. But friends, we're going to address this thing. Do Christians walk away? Do we walk away from the cultural, social, and political systems? Do we no longer influence the way we do education, the way we do politics, the way we do anything outside of the walls of the church? Do we walk away, crawl into our sacred holes, and just whimper and die? Okay, I have several propositions here. In just a moment, we're going to be talking with Steve Dace, who's written a new book called Rules for Patriots. You need to hang in there because this is going to be an important interview. But here's several propositions first. The first is this. These defeatistic Christian theologians need the faith to see that the humanist culture itself doesn't have what it takes to survive. Friends, we've been talking about this for a long time. I'm sorry, but you abort all your kids. You birth implode, you destroy the character of the next generation, you pervert sexuality to the point where you get sexual nihilism. That's called suicide. And typically, people in societies that commit suicide are not in competition for dominion or political, social, and cultural relevance. So keep that in mind, okay? The system is dying, but we've got something that will guarantee survival. And what is that but the principles of God's word? Okay, number two. These defeatistic Christian theologians need the faith to dig in for the long haul. Should Christ tarry? We have no idea when Christ is coming back, okay? We don't place dates on that on this program. But we need long-term faith, not flash-in-the-pan activists. And I have seen my share of flash-in-the-pan activists. What we need are the coals that burn and burn and burn for 50 years, 80 years, 100 years, 150 years. It takes a long time to disciple nations. There's anything we've learned over 2,000 years, you don't do it inside of a single generation. That was the point I made on last Sunday's sermon, available on Sermon Audio, by the way. Here's number three. The defeatistic Christian theologians need the faith to see that God's people win the battles even when all the odds are against them. Isn't that the lesson we pick up from Exodus and from Gideon and all the way through the Scripture? Isn't that the lesson we're supposed to pick up through redemptive history? Yeah, the odds are against us, big deal. We've got God on our side. Okay, that's called faith. The problem with theologians, many theologians, not all, the problem with many of these theologians is they don't have faith. Faith to engage in the midst of the battle. Faith to maintain an optimism throughout the battle, even when the odds are against you. Okay, here's the final proposition. These defeatistic Christian theologians need the faith not to water down the agenda, which ultimately is the standard of the law of God. And that, of course, the temptation is to abandon the battle, or the temptation is to reduce the standard, to bring the standard down, compromise, synthesize, syncretize with whatever's going on out there, and thereby contribute to the ongoing demise. Eschatologically, friends, you know I don't like to spell out an end game. That's up to God. But optimism in the reign of Christ, I think, is essential. Christ has made progress in every culture on every continent throughout this world over 2,000 years. That cannot be denied. To deny it is to deny reality. And it's also to minimize the kingship of Christ. And listen, you don't ever want to minimize the kingship of the Lord of Lords and King of Kings, okay? He's on the right hand of the Father. He's bringing all his enemies under his footstool. It's taken 2,000 years, 2 days, if one day is 1,000 years in God's eyes. And he has made significant progress. Okay, so here we are. The Western world is in decline. Yeah, okay. Our liberties are threatened. Righteousness is not a high priority in your average legislature around America. but we're still engaging, and we're to engage until the end. And Steve Dace is in the middle of the conflict. He's a talk show host. He talks to more people than I do. He's got 40, 50 stations around the country. Homeschool father of three children, I believe. And he's in the midst of, got a new book called Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. The foreword is by David Limbaugh. Steve, hey, welcome back to our program. It's good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right, so here you are. The odds are against you. It's like William Wallace, okay? His band is facing down 13,000 of Edward's troops at the Battle of Stirling Bridge, okay? I like to draw William Wallace into it. Does that make sense? Because William Wallace is facing a rising tyranny in England, and he doesn't get a lot of support from the Republicans on his side.
You know, the strange thing, Kev, is I am, because this is the field God, the mission field God has called me to, I am as aware of what is happening as, you know, anybody is. It's just because it's what I do. It doesn't mean other people aren't aware, but listen, you may know vaguely how your car works, but a mechanic is an expert. It's his field. That's what he's been trained in. So, I mean, this is what I do every day. And so I don't know that your audience can find anybody that knows the stats or knows the deck, how much it's stacked against you more than me, because I'm the guy that usually works with a lot of the names and the candidates that you see on TV running for votes of audiences like yours. But strangely, despite that, there's a part of me that is optimistic for the future. And here's why.
Okay.
We are about to become the counterculture. We're about to become the cool kids. It is so passe to have sex with any orifice or any inanimate object, to declare you are so smart that you aren't sure what in the world is true. I'm so smart I know nothing, because nothing can be true. Nothing can be absolute. I mean, that is so passe, so cliched, that the upcoming generation is rebelling against that. Now, what they're embracing instead are secular strains of libertarianism. But instinctively, it shows that they have figured out the complete fallacy, not to mention nincompoop, that pagan postmodernism represents, which presents us a chance at a real mission field to offer a counterculture, especially for younger generations. And we were just the same, that always want to rebel against what the previous generation taught. We're about to be cool, edgy, hip, avant-garde.
Yeah.
This is a chance for us to take advantage of it, to be the revolutionaries again.
Steve, you know, the millennial generation is seen as the most narcissistic generation and the least interested, the least engaged.
Mm-hmm.
But out of the millennial generation, will there be something of a minority that will become a principled minority that could take this nation back into a decent direction?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's the old Samuel Adams observation of history. It's always a committed minority that changes cultures, whether they're the apostles, the church fathers, whether it's the 56 signers to the Declaration of Independence.
Mm-hmm.
What you're going to see, and I just turned 41, so I'm right in the middle of this generational transition. So I know a lot of the people at the American Family Associations and others who were paramount in the founding of the original Christian right. And I know a lot of the younger generation, the more liberty-minded Christian sort of activists. So I'm right in the middle of this generational changeover. And what you're going to see that's going to be different is you're not going to see a mass mobilization of Bible-believing Christians like we saw in the 80s and 90s, because the numbers aren't there. But instead of a wide multitude of people who show up and vote and maybe get emotionally worked up about a couple of issues, what you are going to see, and I think the homeschooling community that you and I are both a part of are a big reason for this, what you are going to see is more like a Navy SEAL. Instead of a mass armada, more like Navy SEALs, highly trained specialists, not a lot of them, but they're deeper thinkers, and I think they're more willing and capable of actually navigating the halls of power and co-opting them, just as we've seen the pagan left do to us in this last generation.
You borrowed the idea for your cover of your book, Rules for Patriots, from Alinsky's book, Rules for Radicals, I noticed.
We borrowed everything.
Similarity.
Everything
okay.
Except the ideology we borrowed from him.
And have the leftists been more committed to their agenda than those on the right? Do you think?
It's not even a debatable point.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
I'll give one anecdotal example to what I mean, to why I answered your question so bluntly. I've got several friends around the country in elected office. Including high offices, Several are good friends of mine that are in my own state legislature. And every year, our big pro-family group here where I live in the First in the Nation caucus state of Iowa, they'll have a big rally for marriage down at the state house.
Yeah.
And depending on how cold it is, 1,500 to 3,000 people will show up, which is a huge event for a state the size of Iowa. But as my friends in the state legislature tell me, listen, you know what happens is the leftists and the squishes in our own caucus who either are against us on this issue or don't want to talk about it, they know what day you guys are coming down, and they just make an arrangement not to show up that day so you don't have to confront them. But he said, hey, let me show you what the homo fascists do. What they do is they show up every day. Now, they can't do an event where 1,500 people show up, but two or three people show up every single day. They call you out every single day to ask you, why can't we love who we want to love? You know, why can't we be treated equally? And he said that tactic is what wears people down. It's a far more effective tactic than mass mobilizations and marches. The problem for our side of this of this debate, Kevin, is, you know, we have families, we have churches, you know, we have things we'd rather be doing other than politics. So to some extent, they're always going to outwork us because this is their religion. That's really what cultural Marxism is. It's a cult. This is their religion.
Yeah.
That means we've got to work smart because we can't ever work as hard. And that's one of the reasons why I wrote Rules for Patriots, so that we could work smarter.
Okay. So you think they're more committed to their ideology than we are to ours?
I think they're more committed to acting on it.
Yeah.
I think they're more committed. I think they're more willing to die for it. And I see this in the political realm all the time. And I know you have an extensive background in politics.
Yeah.
Let me define incrementalism to the previous generation of Christian conservatism, losing slower.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we thought they were just going to rape, pillage and plunder us for 100% of what they wanted. But we only gave up we only gave the Marxists 80% of what they wanted. That's incremental success. Vote Republican. We get half a loaf is better than none. Yeah. That's essentially what we've done. The other side plays for keeps. They take you out. Notice that they're not worried about, well, you know, if this moderate Democrat in Louisiana wins the primary, they're going to be against marriage and they're going to be pro-life. So we've got to go all in to make sure the more liberal member. They don't care who wins primaries. They don't have to care. They control the machine. They control the system. Mary Landrieu can get elected down there in Louisiana talking as good a Christian game as she wants. The minute she gets to Washington, D.C., the machine puts the proverbial gun to her head and she will toe the leftist Marxist line. They have control of the machine. They worked to make that happen. They were willing to lose elections to make that happen. They did not take slow defeatism as incrementalism. They understood that incrementalism is actually moving towards my goal, not away from it, slower. And we don't have that level of conviction. There's still too many of us that think access-based politics works. Listen, I'm on a first-name basis, Kevin, with men because of God's grace. He's opened doors where I can call on the telephone men who are going to run for president next year, and they will take my call. And I can just promise you, I've got as much access as 99.5% of the American people do to the system. Access-based politics gets you nothing unless your goal is cronyism. If your goal is cronyism, then access-based politics is the way to go. If your goal is to make sure the governor takes your call or your senator takes your call when your kid needs that Eagle Scout recommendation or that letter of recommendation to West Point, then by golly, keep working the access-based model. But all access-based politics does is get you co-opted unless you're a cronyist. If you want to advance an ideological agenda, actually it's confrontational-based politics that does it, and that is what the far left did. They took over the Democrat Party that way, and now they've made major inroads into the GOP as well.
Comes down to it. It can't be a power-based motive. It has to be an ideologically-based motive. You have to be committed to your agenda, first and foremost,
yep.
And you got to be willing to put your lives, your fortunes, your sacred honor on the line for it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, any negotiation, that's really what politics is in many cases.
Mm-hmm.
Any negotiation is always going to be won by the side who cares the least about losing every mm-hmm. single time.
Yeah.
Every single time. And that's really, in a way, it's a game of poker. It's just the stakes are lives, fortunes, and sacred honors, as you just paraphrased from our founding fathers, the direction of cultures. That's really what politics ultimately is. And so whoever comes to the table caring about losing the least always wins. Look what happened last fall on the defund Obamacare. Obama knew the Republicans would not stand up to him, that eventually, after Ted Cruz got done with his filibuster, that the Republican leadership would betray their base. He knew it. And so he just waited him out. I mean, the only people in the world still care, that still are scared of the president, all are running the Republican Party. And they went up there every day for a week and a half. John Boehner went up there negotiating against himself. There was never going to be a deal. He knew he didn't have to cut one. He knew the Republicans were so scared. All he had to do was just wait for them to act on their gutless fear. and split their own base, which is exactly what they did, which is almost what they always do. And they would be doing it on amnesty right now if it weren't for the mess going on at the border at the moment.
Ladies and gentlemen, Steve Dace's new book out called Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. It's a matter of the will. Where you got a will, there's a way. And there's not a lot of will out there amongst the conservatives. Why? What happened? Are we scared? Are we losing faith? Is Christ no longer on the throne? Is eschatological pessimism in the church affecting the way the conservative right is thinking on these things?
Well, there's truth to some degree or another in all of those things. But if I could pinpoint one thing, and I'll take this right out of Rules for Patriots, if you don't mind.
No.
What's happened is we've gone an entire generation in the church without seriously engaging the hearts and minds of the American people. Let me give an example. Young man comes to his pastor and he says, hey, I met this girl in youth group. We're hitting it off. Her father said has given me permission and the blessing to marry her. And I'm just scared to death that I didn't have a good example growing up of what kind of husband to be to her. Pastor, will you disciple me? And any evangelical pastor worth his salt is going to say, absolutely, you bet. And then maybe 9 months into that marriage or a few years into that marriage, that young man comes back again and says, hey, pastor, we're going to have our first baby. And I didn't have a good example as a father. I don't want to be the same kind of dad I had. Will you disciple me according to God's word? What kind of dad ought I to be? And that same pastor is going to say, you bet. A few more years go by and that young man says, you know, I've got a skill, a trade. I'm going to start a business. And I want to be a good steward of the resources God has given me. So can you teach me and disciple me according to God's word? Hey, what does it mean to be productive and generous? What does that mean? And that same pastor is going to say, you bet. But then a few more years go by and that young man is now a middle-aged man, maybe about my age, and his children are either grown or growing up. And he's worried now more about the future than ever before. And he goes back to that same pastor, Kevin, and he says, you know, I really think God is calling me with the wisdom I have and the life experience I have and the convictions I have. I really think God is calling me to run for office. But, man, I have no idea what I'm allowed to do, what I should do when I get there. What would that look like? Can you disciple me? And that same pastor is going to look at him and say, sorry, young man, we don't do politics in the church.
Yeah.
And this plays itself out in 95% of evangelical communities in this country. We have decided, for whatever reason, we have decided that situational ethics is okay. We used to call people who lived out their faith in church and then didn't live it out in front of everybody else hypocrites. Now we call them enlightened.
Yeah.
And we cannot, no man, I say this to my own radio audience all the time, Kevin, no man can rise above his own worldview. If we do not disciple people, then we should not be surprised when they act like they are undiscipled. Or, of course, the root word that their disciple is the root word of what? Disciplined. There is a lack of discipline everywhere you go. Now, politics, when you have this much of other people's money and power at stake, has always been the eternal sea of human nature. But what's really, really sped up the ship of state towards the iceberg, like the Titanic, is the people that are supposed to represent the foundation, that are supposed to represent the plumb line, they're just tossed to and fro as well. I can't tell you how many times I've sat down with people running for office who have asked for my help, either prayerfully consulting with them or helping them, you know, with any connections or network people that I may know. And I'll always ask them the same question every time, the first time we meet. Tell me what you can't do. Well, why'd you ask me that? I said, well, the first time Jehovah introduces his law to the world, it's on two stone tablets, and there's 10 statements, and there are a bunch of don't do this statements. Meaning, here's Jehovah 101, the introduction to God's law, things you cannot do. You can't worship other gods. You can't fashion other gods. You can't adulterate. You can't steal. You can't lie. Here's what you can't do, right? Mm-hmm. So tell me then, what can't you do? If, let's say you get elected to office, what are the things you know you cannot do, you're not allowed to do? And I have to sadly tell you, Kevin, I've had these kinds of meetings dozens upon dozens of times, and maybe two or three people have ever actually had an answer to that question.
Yeah, and sadly, some of these guys turn into tyrants themselves. You know, they turn into those that stand for unrighteousness because they have no idea what the standard for righteousness is, or they haven't been taught or discipled in that area. What's the downside, though? What's the downside of us not engaging?
The downside is what we're seeing happening right now. The reality is we're not engaged.
Yeah.
We actually had 4 million fewer, traditionally Republican voters or right-leaning voters, 4 million fewer voted in this past election than the last one. And listen, I didn't think that either one of the two general election candidates offered the American people much hope. I thought essentially it was a Marxist versus a corporatist. So it's just a matter of, do you want the Marxist to come right in and slit your throat ear to ear, or do you like your kneecap blown off and you bleed slowly to death? That's what the other guy represented. But let me tell you why we had those choices. Because we actually had fewer people vote corporately or combined in the 2012 Republican presidential primary cycle than we had vote in 2008, which was the worst cycle for Republicans since the Watergate election. Now, that's inexcusable. Don't sit there and complain to me about that. Don't call my show and complain to me that it's Marxist A versus corporatist B and you don't want to vote when I ask you, well, when they had your primary in your state and you had a chance to vote for somebody that might actually represent some kind of difference from what you don't like, did you vote? Well, no. Well, who'd you vote for? Well, if I did, well, I voted for the guy Fox News told me was the most electable. Then, I mean, we're killing ourselves by our lack of involvement in the primary system. That's really where you have the best opportunity and the most immediate one to move your ideology down the field. It doesn't take as many voters to impact the primary as it does a general election. And we're at the point now with the collusion of the two-party system where really it's the government party in D.C. versus the American people, Kev, that if the right guy doesn't win the primary, it almost doesn't matter who wins general elections anymore.
Rule one in Rules for Patriots, never trust Republicans or Republicrats. So what do we do? New party? We purge the ancient stables?
I've always tell people when they ask me about a third party, I'd love to see what a second one looks like first. But here's the thing. We have to define Republicrat first. Because we've had terms like rhino for years, and we toss them around so much they don't mean anything anymore. Mm-hmm. A rhino is somebody that is a Republican in a blue state that really is a liberal and just becomes a Republican because there's no more roster spots on Team Democrat left in Massachusetts. There's no more roster spots on Team California left or Team Democrat in California. So they don't believe anything other than I just want to work in politics and I can't be a Democrat, so I'll become a Republican. We recognize people like Christy Todd Whitman and Arlen Specter. It's the Republicrat who's the killer because the Republicrat has consultants around him that has taught him what to say and how to say it to get people like you and mine and your audiences to vote for them. They know how to condescend us, how to patronize us. And then they go to Washington, D.C., though, and cut every deal under the sun with the Marxists. And then they come back home hoping that we're dumb enough, and sadly we have proven until recently that we actually were, to just go by what they say in their talking points as opposed to what their actual records were. And the danger of the Republicrat is they can get elected in Kentucky, Mitch McConnell. They can get elected in Tennessee, Lamar Alexander, because they understand culturally what it is that our people want to hear. And that's why we've got to have a Christ-like model of vetting these people, which is by their fruit, not by what they say, not by what they claim, not even by what they verbalize they believe. What is it they actually do? By their fruit, you will know them. You've got to look at their actual records, because most of what you see in Washington are Republicrats. It is the Hegelian dialectic, which is the thesis and the antithesis are just merged into one narrative.
All right. Rule number two, never attack what you're not willing to kill.
This is a tough one for a lot of Christians who think their goal in life is to be nicer than God. I have run into a lot of Christian men in politics, Kevin, who I am convinced go to bed at night wearing khaki pants and socks with sandals.
Yeah.
And the first thing they do is they make sure when they get up in the morning, they make sure that that last crease is out of their sweater vest. They are just no threat to the system at all. They are not like what, you know, what Mr. Beaver in The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, when Little Lucy says, well, what about Aslan? Is he safe? And Mr. Beaver says, oh, no, 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 no. He is not safe. He is a roaring lion after all, but he is good. We got too many guys who are safe, but they think that's what makes them good. Really, it makes them limp and lame and no threat at all. This is warfare.
Yeah.
This is how we conduct civil war in America. If you don't have the stomach for it, doesn't mean you're a bad person or a bad Christian. It means, hey, there's openings in the chaplaincy. Go there.
Yeah.
Okay. We don't put chaplains in tanks. All right. You put killers in tanks.
Yeah.
That's what this is. This is warfare. This is how we conduct civil war in America. And we get called racist, misogynist, homophobe, xenophobe. And the guy that claims to represent us stands up there and says in response, well, I don't want to question the motives of my opponent, but they've already lost. You've heard of showing up, with a knife to a gunfight. That's like showing up at the OK Corral with a plastic sport. You're toast, dead, done, finished, over. Okay. Can't win that way. If you're not willing to do what must be done, then get out of the way. You're making things worse. I have a friend of mine used to work on Capitol Hill, took a self-defense course once with a former Navy SEAL. And he opened up the class with a gun. And he said, hey, raise your hand if you're willing to kill somebody with this. And everybody that didn't raise their hand, he kicked them out of the class, threw them out and said, you're done. He said, and they said, why? He goes, because if I train you how to use this and you won't use it and you have this in your house, you're more dangerous to your family than if you didn't have one. Because when the perp comes in and you won't pull the trigger, he'll take it from you and pull the trigger on you and your family. So get out. You don't have what it takes. And the vast majority of Christian men in this arena do not have what it takes. They do not have, they do not have the command, gird your loins like a man. Yeah. Doesn't mean being mean, doesn't mean being uber confrontational, but there is a point where sometimes you have to stand there like Luther and say, you know what, listen, this is all I can do. You know, may God have mercy on my soul. Do your worst. I'm not going to move. And there are times that you do need to stand up and say, you know, like David in the Valley of Elah, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that dares to speak like this against the armies of the living God? And we don't have too many men that do that, which is why when a couple of them emerge, like we've seen recently, they rapidly rocket to stardom because they stick out amongst the rest of the girly men.
Yeah. Okay. What's the agenda, Steve? The line of demarcation. What are we defending? What are we going for?
Well, you have to defend. You used the term Western civilization.
Yeah.
We don't use that term a lot anymore. And we need to define for people, what exactly is Western civilization? The idea is that we're born out of, early on, the teachings of someone like an Augustine, and then we're given a rebirth in the Reformation. The idea that you and I, because we're individually made in the image of God, we all have worth, and that I don't need to go to some central entity, whether it's government or human structure, to have access to God and the rights that he has bestowed upon me, that because of through Christ and what he did on the cross, restoring that relationship, I can now commune directly with my creator, and I can directly, as an individual, under his jurisdiction, live the way he has called me to live. And that when I don't, government is to punish me for it. And that's all they are to do. Those simple truths, Cap, yeah, are really what is the heart of Western civilization, gave birth to the Industrial Revolution, gave birth to even some of the aspects of the Renaissance itself. And the greatest advancements and achievement in humankind have come in a post-Reformational world. When the History Channel did their two greatest men of the millennium in 1999, I believe the top two were Johannes Gutenberg and Martin Luther. Why? Because of the invention of the printing press and the Reformation and the spawning of individual liberty and freedom that occurred all over the known world because of technological advancement and the idea of individual liberty under God. And that's what we got to get back to.
What are the important priorities? What do we hit first?
Number one is the life question.
Yeah.
That's the moral crisis of the age.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, I'm reminded of what Ruth Graham, Billy Graham's late wife, once said to him before she died, that if God did not punish America for all of these dead babies, he would have to apologize to Sodom and Gomorrah.
Yeah.
The clock is probably ticking on God's patience with our willingness to tolerate this ultimate unspeakable evil. Yeah. So I think that is the pressing moral crisis of the age.
Right.
And then we have to understand that really everything else, whether it's the homosexual agenda, the erosion of culture, the erosion of religious liberty and free speech, one entity above all is responsible for all of those things, Kevin, and that is government.
Yes.
And we have to seriously and systematically go about dissolving and disintegrating the welfare state and all of the tentacles that go along with it that give government the jurisdictional authority it doesn't belong
and has
doesn't have going
and
for it.
Has destroyed the inner city poor by the tens of millions. Here, we only have a minute left, Steve. What happens in 2016? Are Americans done with the neocons? Or are we going to get somebody decent on the Republican ticket?
I don't think there's any chance an establishment candidate will be the nominee in 2016. And you know me well enough to know I don't give, flowery analysis. I think that wing of the party is dying.
Yeah.
I think it just becomes a matter of what will take its place. We see somebody like Ted Cruz, who represents sort of a return to the old Reagan coalition, somebody like a Rand Paul who represents a new paradigm, or will you see somebody like a Mike Huckabee who is maybe a more conservative version of a George W. Bush? And I think that's what's being debated, and it's going to be up to Republican primary voters. They're going to be the ones that are going to make that decision.
And what do you think should happen?
I really like what Cruz represents, because I think he takes the best of what the Huckabee folks and Rand Paul folks represent. Mm-hmm. The best of those, he chews up the meat, gets rid of the fat, and merges them together, I think, into an actually governing worldview, something that today's lost culture of Americana can still understand and latch onto.
Folks, the book is Rules for Patriots, How Conservatives Can Win Again. You want to be back in a good mood and get a good agenda and a good strategy for yourself, for your kids, for your grandkids, get the book Rules for Patriots, Steve Dace. It's hot off the press. Steve, thanks for joining us on Generations. It's been great. Appreciate you.
Thank you, Kevin.
And folks, you've been listening to the Generations Radio broadcast. Wow. I think I've just been through a hurricane with Steve Dace. This guy is on fire. He's got an agenda and he's optimistic. It's good to run into somebody who's hopeful for the future and is willing to battle in the midst of incredibly bad odds. Friends, this is how you win battles, especially when you're on the right side. Rules for Patriots, the book Steve Dace, available online just about anywhere. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. Hey dads, is it time to get away with your sons to build those relationships? Remember, fruitful relationships is what it takes to have a fruitful life. How you disciple your son has everything to do with the relationship you have with your son. So don't miss a once-in-a-lifetime experience at our father-son retreat at the Crooked Creek Ranch in the Colorado Rockies this August. This year, we will be featuring speakers like Scott Brown, Dan Einerson, Mike Chappa, Steve Vaughn, and yours truly from the Generations Radio program. You'll enjoy outdoor activities, training sessions, including wilderness first aid, mountain survival, blood tracking, as well as sports activities, swimming, high ropes course, rock climbing walls, kayaking, and hiking in the beautiful Colorado Rockies. And we're cutting the price for the 2014 Father-Son Retreat. It all happens August 28th through the 31st at the most fabulous retreat center in the Colorado Rockies. Register today for our Father-Son Retreat at check.org. That's check.org. That's check.org under Check Events on the web. Or call toll-free 877-842-2432. That's 877-842-2432.